different strokes. But let me tell you about one thing I know. Everybody's got a seed to sow. Let your heart of hearts take you down the road. Everybody's got a seed to sow.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. I'm playing a little embers because Rufus was at a big deal at the Capitol last night. And the Band of Oz. I guess we should have played the Band of Oz, but I love the embers so much. We'll see if we can grab something by the Band of Oz this morning. Let me see, Rufus. Does that work there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, should be. Talk to me. Did you have oysters for?
Yeah, we had oysters. We had the Band of Oz. And I did quite a bit of dancing. Back home, we used to say, fast dance.
Or slow dance.
Fast dance.
Well, have they finished the Capitol?
The Capitol's finished.
Okay, they good.
They'll soon be making things from the old Popper roof,
uh-huh.
Which will be for sale. And I'll try to nab some gifts for my lady friends here. So it was a wonderful gathering. The Band of Oz did a beautiful job. And they let me sing Amazing Grace for the blessing of the needle.
Well, good.
And you did it without Elvis.
Oh, well, good musicians are good musicians. Of course they did. Yeah. So what the money goes for the Capitol, and how long has this been going on, this fundraising? Yeah. Who started it?
The Capitol Board Foundation.
Yeah, of which you are part. And the money went to the renovation of the Capitol. It needs maintenance. What did this go for?
The Capitol was built in 1840, and the rugs have only been changed one time, so it's time to do that.
Yeah.
And this other little place, and we have a whole host of docents that come out there, and we take a little of that money and give them a good meal.
Oh, wow, nice. Yeah, well, it's a fascinating place, and there are ghosts in the Capitol, as you can testify.
I can testify to that.
That's when you were Secretary of State?
Yes.
Okay, well.
Things up in the top of the Capitol, banging around, I would say, have a good night. They're in there.
Okay, well, we'll study that as we get closer to Halloween. So we're joined by Miss Campbell over there and Miss Nelsa Cox and Phil Campbell. Hi, y'all.
We're doing well.
Good.
We're doing good. I am.
Okey-dokey. Yes, ma'am.
Yep. It's a nice day.
It is beautiful.
And I'm thankful that it's quit raining for us and the people in the mountains. So, thank goodness. The pansies are thankful. They had 13 inches of rain on them since
Lord.
September 1.
They were happy with the rain?
No.
All of that rain?
They're thankful it's quit raining.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense then.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all are.
Yeah.
And you know, we just can't balance it out very well.
Yeah.
We are also joined by some pollinators. Did y'all know that was y'all's jobs, pollinators? David Tarpey and Henry Hamilton of the Hamiltons of Georgia, right? From Gone with the Wind? No? Okay. So, guys, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us what y'all are involved with. I know that... Amanda Wilkins Bratcher is down at the Lee County Extension Service, is a member of this crew, and she is actively involved with this program. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so Henry and I are here representing the North Carolina Pollinator Conservation Alliance, or the NCPCA, and it's it was formed in 2017, kind of as a loose amalgamation of different officials and nonprofit groups and others who are working in the general space of pollinators, habitat, and conservation. And so the confluence of all of those things has been this group that has come together to collectively try to promote the health and welfare of pollinators for all of the plants and our food supply.
Wow. Henry, what is your job with this program?
So I work with the North Carolina Department of Agriculture Pesticide Section. But we manage what's called Bee Check, which is this place that any of our beekeepers here in North Carolina can put their hives, and people who use pesticides and want to be aware of that, they can go on there and monitor that to make sure they're trying to be safe around that. And then any products that have requirements actually specifically saying can't apply within this area of a beehive, they are required to go on there and check that listing for those hives. It's the main part we do, but we has also produced a couple videos that are on North Carolina NCDA website under pollinators on the pesticide page that show how both our pesticide inspectors and our apiary inspectors go about inspecting hives when there's been a bee death to look for pesticide injury or for starvation or disease in the bee colony. That's about sums up what I'm involved with.
Anything to add? What? How do you want to involve the public?
Next one.
David?
What's really important about the public, involving the public, is first of all awareness. So I think if there is a silver lining with some of the issues with colony collapse disorder and some of the problems that pollinators have been having, is that people are aware of how important pollinators are to our food supply. That wasn't always the case. But thankfully that is something that is more aware. But now we're going into another phase of that public awareness campaign and realizing that there are things that everybody can do in order to help pollinators. One is to provide habitat, right? Bees and other pollinators, they have nectar and pollen as their food sources. So flowering plants are absolutely critical to their health and welfare and their reproduction. So conservation of habitat for large-scale sources of pollen and nectar, and then planting new habitat, right? Restoring habitat for pollen and nectar-bearing plants is really, really critical. Another is to decrease and minimize and mitigate the impacts of pesticides. Sure, there are a lot of negative insects that affect our food supply and other plants, but what is pretty good at killing a pest insect is pretty good at killing a pollinator or a beneficial insect as well. So we really need to balance those things to make sure that we can, you know, have our cake and eat it too when it comes to a pesticide applications, as Henry was alluding to.
We have some beautiful flowers in front of us here. Camellias are mainly camellias.
Mainly, yeah.
I see some
zinnias and azaleas.
Yeah.
And I think there's a...
Are they all pollinators? All the kinds of things we should plant, or what should we plant?
Yeah, so as an entomologist and an ecologist, I focus on the bees, and I'm fortunate at NC State University to have an entire department of horticulture and extension agents that I can rely upon when it comes to expertise on the plants. So I won't pretend to get into that area. But what's, I think, really important generally, talking about pollinators, is that having the entire growing season of something blooming in bloom, and not just one thing, but many things, just like other animals and us, having a diverse diet is really important to pollinators. So always having, you know, half a dozen things blooming at every time throughout the year, I think is really important for local bee health.
Yeah. When we grow vegetable gardens, we should plant pollinators around the vegetable garden, shouldn't we?
Yeah, so that's one of the things in commercial operations or in our backyard vegetable gardens, those plants are only in bloom for a few days or a few weeks. But the bees need to be living all year. So having something on the either side of the main target bloom is really important to foster that local community of pollinators.
Well, David, I'm often asked, well, what pollinator plants do you have? And it almost implies that you have to have a certain thing. Well, I brought in this morning probably a dozen succulents and others. Everything that blooms is a pollinator? Possibly.
Everything that blooms is possibly a pollinator, but a potential food source for all bees, right? So we have 560 species of native bees in the state alone, 4,000 in North America, 20,000 worldwide. So they're incredibly diverse. So not all plants are suitable for all pollinators and vice versa. So that's why it takes a real community approach in looking at a diverse landscape to help all pollinators and not just focusing on one or two things.
Any other questions from Nelsa? Have you been involved with this, Phil or Nelsa?
Just on my own. I typically have, with say my vegetables, my beloved tomatoes and cucumbers and squash and things like that. I try to do a combination of sunflowers, and I'll try to do successions of those because obviously they're going to be a little bit later. But I'll also do, and I listened to the discussion 2 weeks ago about native seeds. I think Amanda was on and the guy from Botanic Garden. Great information. That was a good show. But I'll do some zinnias. I'll do some cosmos. Granted, they're not native, but they're producing. They're producing the nectar. The bees are going to them. They're going to the vegetables. So, I've just always tried to keep something blooming. When I was at the Garden Hut for years and years and years, I would always plant like agastache or nepeta, the catmint, great bloomers, and for a long period of time. So whether it was...
That really catches on, too.
Yeah.
So if you want more of it, you'll be happy.
Yeah. Be happy.
Yeah. I love it too. It smells good.
So, yep.
A lemony fragrance, and a lot of the pollinators. What attracts the pollinators to the flowers? The colors or the fragrance or what? That's what attracts me.
No, that's exactly right. Bees actually have pretty bad eyesight.
Aww.
So the flowers make it easy for them to have these, in this ocean of green, these colorful flowers that pop out to them.
Aww.
But then they home in on it, on the floral sense. So the bees have an excellent sense of smell.
Okay.
So they can home in on that. So the flowers make it easy for them because they want to attract the pollinators. Otherwise, they won't get that cross-pollination, and then, they won't be able to reproduce.
We'll have to chip in and get them some little glasses.
I have a question about that. We have marigolds that we brought in from our plug grower, Bobby, and he always grows a really nice crop for everyone, but especially for the Hispanics, for the Day of the Dead. And he grows the big orange marigolds. Well, I have bumblebees that get on those marigolds, and they act like they're asleep. Mm-hmm. And somebody the other day thought they were dead, okay? So I would start rubbing their back, and they start moving around. So
I guess so.
Why?
So she woke me up.
What are they doing? What is that process with them right now?
That's a good question. I don't know specifically,
okay,
but I'll speculate here.
Okay.
A lot of times when bees are, in flowers, the amount of pollen that they get on their bodies, they're just covered in it, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so they have to spend a lot of time grooming.
Uh-huh.
They kind of combing their hairy bodies and then packing it onto their, they're called their pollen baskets. And so that's how they load them back and then bring them back to their colonies, right? So she could have been doing something like that.
These are not moving at all.
Yeah. Well,
just look at the pollen baskets next time.
And the cooler it gets, their wings are just it just takes them a while for the sun to warm up, hit them.
Yeah, exactly. It might be wet.
They're cold-blooded animals, so they can also get cold or chilled or wet, right? Sun. And so they sometimes can literally run out of gas, and you know they need to warm up. So it could be any number of those things.
Yeah, I'm going to do a little bit of research on them because this was yesterday afternoon and the nice hot sun, and they don't move at all except just barely move their legs when you start to rub them.
Well, they got
to
rest a little bit.
And bees can get drunk.
There we go.
Well, maybe Rubens. They are from the marigolds.
They so in times
because marigolds
of dearth,
are pretty. Blah.
Right. If there's not a lot of local forage of flowering plants, bees will resort to alternative sources of nectar, which is nothing more than sugar water. So fermenting fruit on the ground is, you know, a source of sugars.
Right.
And if it's fermenting,
right,
they can,
okay, good
they
thing.
Can get tipsy.
No.
You always pet them on their back. They're
it won't. Bumblebees especially.
But
they're
I spent some time at the farm this past week, and as soon as I head out the greenhouse, there's a large batch of patch of the celosia or amaranth.
Oh, yeah. They,
the big bumblebees are on that, and I'm like, good morning. And then, of course, the chicken's there, and then, yeah.
Well, that brings up a good point that I'd also like to raise here, because another part of the kind of educational campaign that we have is that not all bees are the same, right? I said that there's 560 different species of native bees, right? Bumblebees are one of them, but they live in colonies. They live in groups, right? So they, you know, kind of forage on behalf of the colonies. Honeybees are the same thing, right? They're our state insect. They live in colonies of 50,000 bees. Henry was talking about how beekeepers who manage them can protect them from pesticides. But the other, you know, 560 or so species are native bees. They're solitary bees. Like, think of a carpenter bee, right? That's just making her own nest, and she's going out and foraging. She's just doing her own thing. She's not doing it in coordination. So, you know, the bumblebees and the honeybees are often very prominent because they live in large colonies. So if you see one, you'll probably see many. But a lot of these native bees, you know, just one or two plants on your windowsill or something like that is perfectly sufficient to provide a meal for those solitary bees.
Hmm. Beekeepers are so important, and I think we are all so fascinated by this. The state fair is coming up. The pollinator program or beekeepers going to be involved with this? It seems like there's always an exhibit.
Yes, I do believe there will. I also, if I'm not mistaken, they planted a pollinator habitat on the grounds this year.
Oh, neat.
That will be, I can't remember which building it's by, but it'll be right there by all the exhibit hall and where all the different stalls are for them. Market area.
Wow, that'll be fun. Yeah. Well, guys, if we want to go out, maybe come to the farmers market or Campbell Road Nursery or someplace today, or at Logan's and buy some pollinator plants, maybe two or three. What would you recommend most important?
Yeah. So again, I'm no plant expert, so I'm not going to pretend to, but there are any number of lists out there. One of the members of the North Carolina Pollinator Conservation Alliance is Debbie Roos. She's an extension agent.
Well, she knows her stuff.
Kenny. She certainly knows her stuff. And
yeah.
She has a wonderful list Growing Home Foods. I'm forgetting her website. I'm sorry, Debbie. But she has an amazing list. If you just Google that, there's she has a top 25. She had a, you know, desert island list of the top 25 plants for native bees. She has it, but a lot more there. She also has a pollinator garden to die for at the Chatham Mills.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
That's sweet.
Yeah, and she does agrotourism for pollination through there, and so she's kept very, very busy all through the season. Also solicits a lot of volunteers to help her maintain and to plant that. So there's any number of lists. I don't think you can just narrow it down to three.
It depends
completely on the location and all the specifics. But again, if you just follow the standard principle of having many things blooming at the same time, but all throughout the course of the year, that's really what's going to be best for pollinators.
Henry?
I will add that if you're there at the fair and you swing by the pesticide section, we've got packets of seeds for a pollinator mix that'll be freely available to the public.
Where will you be? Which building?
In the exhibit hall. Where
all the different vendors
and everyone are set up.
We'll can't wait to go in there and I'll say hey to you. Want to see you? But where can we find out more about this online? Is there a website or
yes.
more information on what y'all are doing?
We do have a website. If you go to ncpollinatoralliance.org, you can find a lot more information on what we do and different efforts you can get involved in. I will add that we're about to do some maintenance on that website, so depending on when you try to go on there, it may be down in the coming month or so, but it will be a good source of information.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you very much for taking the time to come over. We'd love to have you again sometime.
Thank you.
If we can ever help you promote anything, please contact me at WPTF.
Excellent.
All right. By the way, we're only on 2 hours this morning. The Tar Heels are playing today. Jeff, who are they playing today?
Pitt.
Ooh. All right, that'll be...
I haven't said a word.
Pitt's pretty tough. They're undefeated, aren't they?
Yes.
I never say anything. Not even about last week.
No.
And I did not either, but
I didn't.
I wanted to.
All right. Well, we'll Rufus, why don't you just put on your watermelon glasses and just forget it. Yeah. But at any rate, we're only on 2 hours this morning. I think this weekend, next week maybe. The Tar Heels have a noon game, so their pregame stuff will be on a little earlier too. So, but come out. One of the big things that we are involved with out here today, except for being at the great State Farmers Market in Raleigh, Neighbors Helping Neighbors. It's our Hurricane Helene donation drop-off here at the State Fairgrounds. We are at the location of where the market imports was at one time, and where Logan's will have a place at some point. And we're so glad to be involved with this. There are lots of things that you can contribute. This is the drop-off point. It's very easy to get to. We're just above the Farmer's Market restaurant. Henry, good seeing you, buddy. Come back to see us. And
thanks, Henry.
Please bring, there are all kinds of things, solar charger packs, candles, lighters, bleach, dog and cat food, shelf-stable food, non-electric can openers, for instance, bleach, vinegar, so many things. You can go online to the Facebook page for State Farmers Market, and we'll be back. That's the Band of Oz. We're playing all this beach music. Rufus, who was entertained, and a lot of people were giving money to the State Capitol Fund, and a big oyster roast at the Capitol Building last night. So Rufus was dancing and he sang, and you didn't sing anything but Amazing Grace, right?
I sang only Amazing Grace as a way of offering thanks.
Was that enough for people,
or
you didn't get requests for anything else?
But the Band of Oz said they had never really done that one before, but they can do things like that.
Well, they're musicians, so you know.
Yeah, musicians are just really.
All they have to do is just
a wonderful band, and a wonderful cause. And by the way, let me go ahead and tell people again, our wonderful Super Kids program will be October 24 at 5:00 at Pam's Restaurant on Western Boulevard. And even though you haven't told me yet whether you're coming or not, you may show up, and you may give us money. you may do it. I give you permission.
Now, how do we let you know? Do we need to send it by mail, by email?
Well, it would be okay now Rufus at rufusedmiston.com if you want to do one of those fancy PayPal things and this and that. Otherwise, you can do just Rufus Edmiston. Call Cheryl.
Well, can we text Cheryl or email Cheryl and you to let you know?
Yeah.
Because I know that on the flyer, it has a thing that you can cut off and mail in.
Right. And I know some of our listeners have asked about it, and they want to help contribute. Look, if you can't get time to let us know you're coming, come on anyway. We'll make room at the house for you. We'll pull up a chair, and you can have one of the best meals you've ever eaten. And your heart will be moved when you hear those young kids get up and tell their stories.
Yeah.
And the people surrounding me right now are such, you, Mike, Nelson, Phil, have been so very kind and generous and supportive of the Super Kids. And it's an event I look forward to every year because these kids give back. They give back. And we've got three new kids, and they're all three, by the way, going to go to community college. And I think that's excellent. A new trend.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's great.
Now, I'm not going to get in trouble here, I hope, with my alma mater or my NC State friends, but a lot of this stuff where people said all over the years, you got to go to college, you got to get a degree. You don't have to. Who's ever heard of a plumber going broke?
Yeah, well, you got to go to school. You don't necessarily have to go to a university.
You have to be trained.
Training. And you know,
yeah, you need to be trained. HVAC, plumbing, electrician,
and they all do it right. They
and
have
horticulture too.
You have to work with a plumber for years before
do an apprenticeship.
That's just
there's wonderful wonderful training in horticulture too, like at Sandhills
gosh.
There's tons of people that I know that went to Sandhills and got really, really good jobs, and they're very good horticulturalists.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many jobs where you really need to be an apprentice, and you are not given that chance.
Right.
Well, I'm not knocking college degrees.
Oh, no. No.
But at the same time, this whole thing about you got to go to college, they've shown through statistics that sometimes where you owe several thousand dollars,
$100,000.
Yeah, trying to get a degree in something, and then you get out, and you can't get a job that pays you nearly as much as a plumber.
Yeah, yeah. Thank God for the plumbers and electricians and all the people who keep
HVAC.
Oh my goodness!
It's
hard to
find.
There's
a big shortage in that.
Big shortage. So yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and we before we talk to Richard, I want to mention again, we are a drop-off site, Neighbors Helping Neighbors, Hurricane Helene, donation drop-off, Neighbors Helping Neighbors. Great thing here at the State Farmers Market. And there are all kinds of things that you can bring by. There's a list on toilet paper and paper towels. So all you people who went to the stores and hoarded toilet paper during what you thought was going to be a strike where you won't ever have any more toilet paper.
What's it made here? It's made in the United States.
It's trucked and railed in. And, you know, since you bought all of that, donate some of it. You're not going to be able to use all of that in your lifetime, some of these people. Did you hear about that? Oh, it's ridiculous. So come bring it here, please. Those wonderful people up in the mountains need it. They need so many things up there. And there's a list at the State Farmers Market website and also on the Facebook page. And it's located near the State Farmers Market restaurant where the garden center is going to be and what used to be the Market Imports here up on the hill where we did, the Weekend Gardener did our first remote over on that side. Charlie Edwards was the manager, and
I remember doing it at Fowler's, when it was Fowler's Nursery.
Yeah,
we had the first 5-year contract.
But there was nothing in here then. So that was sometime in the late 80s. No, it was like 88 or something. Mm-hmm. Irv and I believe.
It wasn't finished until 1991, 92.
Are you sure?
I'm 100%
okay,
sure.
Well, I'm wrong then.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Yeah. Like one time... said, Your Honor, you're right, and I am wrong, as you always are.
Yeah. Well, I am quite often, and I'm told I am.
He got in trouble with that judge. He said, don't you need to rephrase that a little bit? You're right, Your Honor, and I am wrong, as you always are.
All right. Well, whenever it was, we did a remote up here. That was the first one I remember. We may have done another. We did one in Fuquay at the park with Irv. And one in Cary at the first whatever spring thing that they have, and it was near the administrative buildings over there, kind of that greenway where there's a hill. But those are the first three that I remember. The one in Fuquay might have been the first, but I think it was here. I don't know. But anyway, what's the park over there? It's been there forever, in not far from downtown.
Fuquay.
Huh?
Bond?
No, in Fuquay. Yeah.
Wombles, Falcon Park.
I bet it was.
Falcon Park, yeah.
But, yeah. All right, 919-860-9783. And Richard is with us. Morning, Richard.
Good morning. I've discovered recently that Rufus is really gets around even more than we thought.
He gets around.
I was watching one of the Marx Brothers episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And the episode was Rufus and Mrs. Teasdale, where Groucho plays the Tin Pot Dictator in the
Was he named Rufus?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Did you know that, Rufus?
No, I did not. I'm going to learn something here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rufus and Mrs. Teasdale is the episode, and he was the dictator of the nation Begonia.
Yeah. Don't you remember that movie where they played where Groucho was a head of a nation?
Yep.
The Stooges did one too, which is most appropriate.
Yeah.
Marx Brothers and being leaders of a country. Yeah.
And
how do you do, Richard?
How did Rufus do?
Well, Not too good in the end.
Yeah, for a Marx Brothers movie. Well, at any rate, what else is going on?
I just want to relate something to Hurricane Fran. And those of us who were trying to recover were thankful to Jim Hunt, because for those of us who work for the state, he gave us a week off to help our neighbors.
And oh, what a great idea.
I remember that.
Hopefully other leaders can follow that example.
Yeah.
And I was working at DOT at the time, and one of the folks who was in the survey department had to go check on his employees, and they were helping some folks at a tobacco barn and clearing out all the damage. And then it started to rain. They were all hot and sweaty, so they got under the roof line so they could cool off. And the tobacco barn was under some pine trees. Unfortunately, there were pine trees full of red bugs.
Oh, no.
Be careful about the results, the relief that you seek.
But red bugs. Yeah. Brings back bad memories. Oh, well.
And I just had a question, hopefully, about the pollinators. If you have to use 7 or diatomaceous earth, which is the least toxic or to the pollinators?
Well, I can tell you that 7's the worst.
Yeah,
I would definitely agree with Rufus on that.
Tell us what diatomaceous earth is.
Well, the thing about diatomaceous earth, I mean, it's mined from the bottom of the ocean. It's a very, very fine, basically organic. There's food grade, and then there's, pesticide grade, if you will. But it's used to kill, it's basically almost like insulation, like glass, like it'll cut you. So hard-shelled bodied, hard-bodied insects, fleas, things of that nature. It comes in contact with them. It basically kind of slits them open and give and they dehydrate. But it is an organic, considered an organic treatment. You know, Pullen Park used to use it in their diatomaceous earth and their filtering. They would filter the water. So I think there was a lot of diatomaceous earth that got scattered downstream. But, you know, even something organic can be a bad thing if it's misused or a good thing. So, you know, I'm just thinking of how fine it is. I don't know that that would be a good idea to use that and the bees pick it up and they take it to their hives. I'm certainly no expert on that. So consulting with, you know, like the fellows or through extension may give you a better answer, but definitely no on seven for sure.
What are you trying to kill, Richard?
Well, this summer, tomato plants were invaded by ants, and so the problem that I ran into with either product was it rained so much it didn't make any sense to keep putting it out, the same way with the fungicides. The tomatoes ended up with crop failure anyway from fungal diseases, and there was just no way to solve it.
I don't know whether it does any good or not, but I have a good or bad habit of using oil based on anything and thinking, well, if something's alive, this might smother it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever hurt anything, the oil based spray that.
Like horticultural oil?
Right. Just watch where you spray it.
Yeah.
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 Spray it. 10W,
yeah. Change your oil occasionally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And the neem oil just stinks.
Well, that's part of it, Richard. You got to take the stinkies in life.
That's right.
Got a cigar?
Oh.
Do I have a cigar? Oh, Richard. Got one right around the corner just waiting on me to go chomp down on it at the next break.
You left it around a corner?
Yeah, just around your corner.
Oh.
Okay. You don't smell it?
No, I don't smell it.
It's a stealth cigar.
Apparently so. Well, Richard, thank you very much
for
calling.
Well, y'all nice have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye. 919-860-9783. 919-860-WPTF. A nice lady coming over. I think we're the tents.
Let me get some donuts.
Oh, are you bringing those to us? Oh, I thought you were bringing. you're bringing food over here.
Good morning.
Oh, this is. This is the chairman of the Rufus Dog Society.
These came from South Hills.
Oh, thank you.
Have some.
Yeah, we'll just make an exchange there. Young man, you need to jump in. Both of you, three little fellows. Need to jump into that.
Well, let me tell you a funny story.
Do it on mic, Rufus.
At the hospital the other day.
Yeah, do it on mic.
We're not on the air, are we?
Yeah.
Well, I was having this little. Oh my gosh, we were having this little procedure, and some lady, one of the technicians in there, and I was sort of doped up, and she said, "I have a question." She said, "I go to the farmer's market, and occasionally, I eat at a wonderful little delicatessen restaurant, and I noticed on the wall of that restaurant is a picture of a Rufus dog." She said, "Do you know anything about that?" I said, "Honey, you are talking to him right here." As I was laying there tied up on that gurney, couldn't move, and she let out a war whoop. She said, "I never thought I would catch a Rufus on a gurney, and you're a celebrity." So we
just
talked
doesn't
about
know
your shop, your wonderful shop, while I was having an operation the other day.
How about that?
And she loved that picture.
Yeah, it is a great picture. I put it on Facebook, too. Got a nice reaction to the billboard. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. And those nice little boys are happy. How old are they? 10 and 8. Now, I like your orange glasses. Rufus likes.
Let me show the boys my glasses.
See if you like these glasses. Watermelon glasses. Does he look good in those? You think, boys? Yeah.
Is that good?
How about that? All right. Jeff, you just cut me off.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, when you come to the farmer's market, you want some wonderful, wonderful hamburgers, hot dogs, chicken salad, you name it. Go to the market shop there and look up these wonderful people, because they give you great food, and you can get the famous Rufus dog, mustard, salt, chili, and onions. So it's a great place to go, friendly people, and you operate. What is that thing that shoots out little balls of dough and makes a pop, yeah, and you can eat them and they won't make you fat? What do you call those things?
What are they? Pops?
Yeah, the pop cake?
Pop cake.
Pop cakes.
Yeah.
Sounds like a little 210 shotgun going off.
How about that? Well, thank you so much. Market Grill.
Thank you.
Market Grill.
Yeah, the market shops.
The Market Grill.
Where they sell the famous Rufus dog there. And there's probably at least one Rufus dog in there. 919-860-9783. Jason, do we need to take a break? All right, Marcia, good morning. You're on WPTF.
Morning.
Hey, how you doing, Marcia?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm great. How can we help you?
Well, I've got a terrible problem with mold.
And are you sure? Are you sure they're moles and not voles?
Yes, we've had.
Okay.
We've had professionals come out. We've been dealing with this for over a year.
What are they doing?
Well, they're messing up my yard.
They just so they're making tunnels. They're not killing any of your plants. So they are moles.
No, but you know where they make your yard soft. And
yeah, it makes
I'm
it hard.
Not sure what kind of grass we have, but I understand. We've just lived here 4 years, and beforehand it's real expensive, and the grub worms love what they can get from it, and that brings the mold.
Right. And, yeah. So you got to get rid of the grubs. You got to get rid of their food source.
Yeah. Well, how do you do that? We've had professionals. We've gone.
Well, what did the professionals do? Did you have a company that exterminators?
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh huh.
And
well,
my son has bought stuff from the hardware stores and we've done everything, and it is awful because you walk out there, it's salt.
Yeah, and you fall, don't you? Have you fallen? Yeah.
Does anybody have a secret?
Well, yeah, this is going
to
sound crazy.
You used to get rid of them. They're awful.
Well, at one time I had them in my yard. And we got a cat, and I'm telling you, that cat destroyed the mole population.
And they're not that many out there. If you had voles, there'd be lots of them because they're little field mice. But voles are different, and there's only a family of them out there. But they work hard.
Yeah, that's what my son said.
Yeah.
That usually there's just a few, but they have done great destruction to my yard.
Well, you need to you need to get a cat or a dog that likes to dig, and so you got a way.
I have three cats, but they're indoor.
Okay, one of them has got to be relegated to the outdoors.
Got to kick somebody out of the house.
Yeah, you got to get somebody out of there
for having to pay rent.
Yeah.
So, and also just understanding the life cycle of the grub population is when you're going to find, be more efficient or more have more control of basically terminating that particular cycle or population of grubs. So that's important to follow through, extension agent or NC issues. I think even the Turf Files has a section on that. So that is what Mike was saying, is you've got to control the grub population first. I'm a big advocate of castor oil, either in granular form or just spraying, but that is definitely a great deterrent for or castor beans.
You've had castor oil before, haven't you, Marsha?
Castor oil, castor beans, but that's a great deterrent for moles.
You didn't like it, did you?
You brought up a real bad subject in my childhood.
I have some liquid now. Can I just pour that on the places that are sinking my yard?
Yeah. Yeah, you could do that. Hey, Nelsa, she has liquid castor oil. Who you been giving that castor oil to, Marsha?
Well, I use it for different things. Look, I'm 81. I've been listening to WPTF since Bart and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So invite the neighbors over. And
had his dog slit.
Well, you got to find out where they got some places around there where they go in and out of the ground. They don't come out
exactly.
very much.
I was going to say, invite the neighbors over and try
tell.
To stomp
and
those.
I poured everything in there. I heard coffee.
All right. You need, as Nelson was telling you, you need to get the neighbors over and get everybody to trample down the runs. That's the first thing you need to do.
And then just figure out, you know, the next day, where's my new run, where's my new start, and then put your castor oil there.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Wherever they're most active.
Speaking of castor oil and runs.
I don't know. So does that help? And run one of those cats out of there. You can't have three cats in the house. You got to have one outside. That's all there is to it.
I can't have my cats outside. They'll get killed.
Well, they'll let them out there and get the moles, because they'll bring some to you as an offering. And then when that's done, you can let them come back inside.
I don't want that.
Starve them.
Okay,
let them go shopping.
I'm going to try. I'm going to look up about the grub worms and everything. This is just horrible.
Right, and we got to go, Marsha, but
you
call us again and let us know if you got rid of those moles, all right?
I love WPTF.
All right, well, take a drink of castor oil and have a great day. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. We have the State Farmers Market.